Welcome back to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Wiseup. Today we're joined by the specialist of special guests. You know him. You love him. He's been on the show many times. He's world famous at this point. I'm surprised he found time to come back on our humble little show. It's the man, Jay Dyer. That's right. We're going to talk about Jay Dyer's journey, okay? About how this guy went from reading books and sort of red-pilling himself to hosting Alex Jones's InfoWars, making philosophy courses, doing live stage shows with Jamie Kennedy, working with Tucker Carlson. This guy's he's crushing it. I mean, it's an insane. He's very inspirational to me because, and as you'll hear, we talk about our histories together. You know, we both started out bloggers. He was ahead of me, of course. But man, I'm this guy gives me something to aspire to, right? Moving up the charts here. So we're going to talk about the journey of Jay Dyer, how he got to where he is today. We'll get some inside scoop on what it's like hanging out with Alex Jones. And he's going to tell you about a very special event he's got coming in LA on July 6th with Jamie Kennedy. It's like this insane 5-hour party that he's got going on. He'll tell you about that. And of course, I'll put the links in the show notes to all of his stuff. Follow him on the socials. Get tickets to the show. It's going to be a big deal, man. I wish I could go. I got family coming in town. Otherwise, I would get out there and check it out myself. But he's going to talk about, you know, stand-up comedy, all kinds of stuff. And then at the end, you're going to hear it. We'll give you the warning. We're going to talk about Twin Peaks. There's going to be some details of spoiler in there. In hindsight, now that we've already recorded it, it's hard for me to know. If you're sensitive to spoiling, then you know, you can drop off when we say, okay, here comes the spoiler talk. But if you're not sensitive to it, you know, we're not giving away too much about Twin Peaks, but there are going to be elements that you're going to say, it's going to be like, oh, that's what happens. Okay, cool. Right. So, choose for yourself. But yeah, let's take a listen to the journey of Jay Dyer. Let's go. All right, everybody, we've got a man on here who needs no introduction on this show. He's been featured on here possibly more than any other guest, if not at very minimum tied, but I think he might have the most. This is your, as far as I know, your fourth appearance on this show. And we've done several projects together over the years, going way back to the earliest one I recall was I did your show in February 2016, where we talked about the Super Bowls and the Grammys and some black magic ideas. And then in 2018, I had you on. At the time, it was called Conspiracy Theories and Unpopular Culture. But we talked Esoteric Hollywood 2, which was your second book. We talked Red Sparrow. Then in June 2020, we talked COVID, protests, Great Reset. Then in July of 2020, we did the Occult Hollywood Superstars, where you and I, and I think Jamie was on that one. We talked about the Free Britney thing on Tinfoil Hat. And then again in August of 2020, I did Jay's analysis. We talked Parsons, Crowley, Marjorie Cameron.
Oh yeah.
So it's been a few years, and you know, I would dare I say you're the oldest friend of the show here, going back to the blogging days of IlluminatiWatcher.com and Jay'sAnalysis.com. And Jay's been making big moves, co-host of Hollywood Decoded, author of Esoteric Hollywood 1 and 2, co-host of the Alex Jones InfoWars show. Maybe the audience has heard of that. And then now you're doing these live performance. Stand-up comedian is now on your repertoire, and you're here to check in. Welcome back to the show, Jay Dyer.
Thank you, Isaac. Yeah, of course. Jamie and I still listen to your podcast on the regular, so glad to be here with you again. And yeah, man, it's been crazy. I remember reading Illuminati Watcher back in the day, back in the blog days. I remember clicking over there and reading about you had a really good analysis that popped in my head about Nightmare on Elm Street. I remember I liked that because you were getting into trauma-based mind control and Nightmare on Elm Street. And I never thought about that in terms of Nightmare on Elm Street, but I was like, this is actually pretty good point here. So yeah, we've been having good conversations over the years. So thanks for having me back. Really appreciate it. And keep up the good work over here on your end, man. I mean, yeah, 2023 was pretty crazy. I did Tim Cast and we did a Tucker Carlson special. So it was like,
I forgot those. Yeah, massive.
Things got really crazy this year. And then Sam Tripoli was the one that was like, "Dude, do live." I was like, "Do live?" I never thought about that. I was like, "I don't. That's weird. Try a lot." And turns out it's been pretty fun. We've done I think 4 or 5 live events, and they've all turned out well. It's a different ball game from internet stuff, obviously, but. You're trying to get people out to the events and trying to sell the tickets. And it's kind of like a whole other layer of sales and marketing that you have to do. So,
yeah,
but it is fun. Like the energy and the vibe of people live is a whole lot of fun. And yeah, we've integrated a lot of other stuff. Like Jamie does a long talk on Hollywood esoteric stuff. I do a talk on philosophy in the new book. And then I do a whole series of about 30 or 40 impressions. So we've kind of
30 or 40.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. Man.
Yeah, I do a debate with the Funko Pops. So, like, basically, because I hate Funko Pops, I think they suck. I debate a Funko Pop, and the Funko Pop, like, does impressions, but they're just me doing the impressions. So,
yeah, that sounds like a good time. Do you ever get, I feel like the adrenaline would probably be pumping pretty good at a live event. Do you ever get people who are combative or get really angry at the theories you're presenting? Or is everybody pretty much on the same level? They already kind of know what you're going to talk about.
I think most of the people that would pay the tickets, you know, for the ticket, pay the money for the ticket, kind of already kind of like what we do. And it's usually we have a pretty tight knit fan base, but I've had a few people that have walked out. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Okay. Maybe two. Yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. That's what I worry about the most trying to do. Cause I actually was going to do my first, it's not a live event in the sense of what you're doing there, but it was like a comic local. We had a Comic-Con out here in Salt Lake. It's pretty big. And I was going to do a presentation in 21, I think it was. And I started getting some really sort of mean-spirited messages. And it kind of shook me. And I was just like, why am I doing this? Like, I don't need to do this. Everything's fine. I got the internet thing working fine. I don't need to expand into this field. So I kind of backed out and chickened out. But yeah, that's interesting that Sam talked you into doing this, and you've done a few of these, right? I mean, you've done a few of these shows.
Yeah, we've done 5 live events now, I think, 5 right. or 6. So I think this will be this 5th or 6th one, I forget. But
and this one's in LA.
Yeah, we did Orlando, Nashville, Austin. We did another event with somebody else, and then we had another live event in Nashville a couple weeks ago that was pretty big. And then yeah, this one will be in LA, July 6th. So we got. I didn't think he would do it, but you know, we got Jamie Kennedy to come out. He's going to do stand up. So it's like our events are kind of like parties. They're like a 5-hour event where, you know, you've got like silly stuff from me. Then you've got Jamie doing a serious presentation. Then I do a serious presentation. And then we usually have like a guest person who wants to speak. We've had comedians in the past. We've had philosophy presenters at other events. And so this one, I was like, I said, "Hey Jamie, you want to come to this?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure. We could set that up." So he was willing to come out, and he's kind of conspiracy adjacent, which, you know, is pretty cool. So
yeah, I've seen him he was
on with Tripoli. So, you know, that's why I saw him on there, and I was like, well, I wonder if he'd be, you know, interested in coming and doing some stand up or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I haven't listened to his shows, but I did see he was hitting those sort of conspiracy type circuits. But yeah, you're right. I missed a couple big ones. You were on these huge projects. You got Tucker Carlson fired, if I remember correctly. what's going on with that, man? I'm not a huge fan of Tucker, although I do because I'm way too like on the liberal side of the spectrum for Tucker, but I have seen many clips of his show where I sat back and thought, man, like some of this, everything he says isn't wrong. Like he says a lot of good stuff. I just happen to, you know, catch the good ones every now and then on TikTok clips. But
so one of his producers,
tell me about the project you did with him. Yeah.
One of his producers is a big fan of what we do. And he had gotten Father Josiah Trenum on one of the Tucker specials. And so he thought we got to be buddies with not Father Josiah, but the producer.
Excuse me. And,
he was like, "Hey, I want to try to work you into one of these." And, you know, so we were spitballing some ideas, and I was actually joking when I was like, you know, "Hey, yeah, I should dress up like Klaus and, you know, get a bald cap and run around in Austin and ask him a bunch of questions that Klaus Schwab would ask." And then I didn't think he would actually do it, but he bought like the Klaus outfit and the bald cap. So when we were doing our live event in Austin, Tucker's film crew came and showed up, and And he was like, "Hey, I got your Klaus suit. Let's put it on." I was like, "You really literally bought the?" I thought it was just joking around. But so now I put on the Klaus suit and we went out to the park in Austin. And we figured that, you know, we would find all of the OG granola wokesters out there, like literally saying that we need to eat bugs. And sure enough, like I think 6 out of 7 people were like, "Yeah, I'll eat bugs." Mm-hmm. So if you just have some weird guy, you know, this German guy in a bald cap walking up to you going, "You will eat the bugs. I will put you on the universal basic income." And almost everybody was into it. They're like, "Yeah, dude, give me the bugs, bro. Yeah." So, it all turned out really well. My only criticism is that, like, I'm about the first 10 or 12 minutes of that documentary, but there were so many funny things that got cut. Like, there were so many people that were just really... There was a lot of comedic value that didn't make it into the final cut because they were like, "Yeah, we need to hurry up and do it." But no, technically, I did not get Tucker fired from Fox. There was he had been talking about a lot of red pill issues for a long time. So I think a lot of things mounted up would be my thesis on it. But yeah, that same time we were in Austin, we filmed a whole in studio thing with Lord Voldemort for it was a 2-hour special we did with him. And so yeah, everything just kind of went crazy around that time. And then we did the Timcast, I think Timcast was right before that. That was a big boost to the audience. So
yeah, massive shows here. Yeah. Now the Tucker thing, to let people know, you worked with him on this documentary about eating the bugs, and we can talk about that. But then it was the day after or the week after that aired is when he got fired from Fox News. Right. And here's what's interesting. I just did a show with Danny Polischuk on his YouTube channel last week. And he's a comedian, he's got a pretty big following. And he said that the week prior, he did a show with a guest, I don't remember the guest name, where they were talking about Klaus Schwab and the Great Reset, right? I'm sure I haven't heard it. It must have gotten into conspiratorial stuff. And he got I don't know, it was a defamation. He mentioned something about defamation, and it was some kind of, I don't know, cease and desist, or they just took his video down or something like that. And I kind of bugged out a little bit, you know, because I've talked about Klaus, and I do think, and that's kind of one area where, you know, a lot, so like, for instance, with the bugs thing, there, I do have this sort of granola, wokester, alkaline thing where I would like to be a vegetarian, or I'd like to be vegan because I like animals or whatever, but I also like the taste of meat all the products. Cause for a while there, I didn't know. I tried to get into like the tofu type thing. And then I started learning about health and like realized, oh, the soy is not good for me. It's got like estrogen mimicking properties. Okay. Right. So that's not good. Then Beyond Meat came out and I was like, well, these are pretty good. Like maybe this is a nice compromise for me. But then my nutrition coach, she kind of walked through the ingredients of me and she fully convinced me that I was like, oh, this is terrible. Like this is not healthy food at all. So, you know, I'm back to eating meat. Right. But I do understand the perspective of people that are like, well, yeah, I'll eat bugs. Like maybe that'll save a cow or two or whatever. It's like, I kind of get that thinking, but I also don't think this is the answer. And that's where I'm at with the Great Reset stuff. Cause as you might have known listening to my shows, like there's elements of it that I think, well, I mean, some of this doesn't sound bad, but I'm still with the conspiracy camp where I'm like, but I don't trust Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum to be the ones that are going to really help us. Cause we all know it's a trap, right?
It's kind of like GMOs. Yeah. GMOs, a lot of the hippie kind of crowd kind of pioneered a lot of the health stuff, organic food, you know, that comes out of a lot of the anti-establishment, anti-corporate mindset, which I agree with all that. But then what happens is that a lot of times the big super corporations come in and they basically co-opt and buy up these kinds of movements. So the legitimate groundswell that's opposed to this stuff is usually pretty accurate. Like I agree with a lot of the anti-Vietnam war critiques. And I pretty much stayed, you know, consistently anti-war for the last, you know, 20 years. So ever since I woke up, you know, post Big Nine event, I've been anti-war. I'm not a pacifist. Like, I think there are times when you can defend yourself, but I don't think modern wars are fought on the basis of self-defense. I think that's a lie. They're usually fought on the basis of you know, the Western power elite wants to expand and have, you know, Pepsi and Coke and Subway and all these other nations. And I don't want to die for Subway. You know what I mean? Like I was always, because my dad really wanted me to go in the military, and I'm not against military people. I think it's a noble pursuit. It's a virtuous thing, but, and I know you had that background, so you know it better than me, but I just always felt like modern warfare was being fought for, you know, like Smedley Butler says, for the interests of banking elite. So I'm not going to fight for that, but I do think there's, you know, genuine self-defense and all that. So likewise, I would say with the movements of diet and all that, usually the original movements are pretty honest and sincere. And then what happens is like over time, it kind of melds into this other thing that steers people into the global order. So yeah, I agree with your take.
Okay. Well, that's good to hear. That makes me feel a little bit better. Cause I always think, man, like a lot of this stuff, you're right though. It does get absorbed into sort of other interest, right? Did you ever see the Source Family documentary?
Yeah, absolutely.
Father Yod. Yeah.
Yeah, because he had the first vegetarian restaurant.
Right. Yeah, that's a fascinating documentary. I saw it's on Amazon Prime again. For anyone who hasn't seen that, that's one of my favorite documentaries.
It's great. Yeah, Jamie and I did a podcast several years ago on like the best cult documentaries, and that was one of them. Have you seen Holy Hell? That one's good too.
No.
Yeah, you should watch that. That guy's wild.
Okay, I'll check that one out. Yeah, I'm definitely into those kinds of documentaries.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, okay, cool. Now, the we're kind of caught up. Before we move on to, I wanted to talk to you because I feel like it's been 3 years since I've had you on here, and there's going to be a lot of new people that maybe aren't familiar with your work or your history or how you got where you're at. But I want to talk to you about Alex Jones InfoWars because, you know, Alex Jones he's one of the most interesting characters on the planet. Have you been able to, since you started working on his show, have you guys spent any like personal, I mean, and you obviously don't have to answer any of this if you don't want to, but
no, we've hung out a few times. Yeah.
Oh man, what's that like?
He took us to dinner when we were in Austin. So yeah. That was wild.
Oh, that's cool.
And then the first time I met him,
people stop him and stuff and like say, hey, what's up, man? I mean, he's pretty recognizable.
Yeah. We went to this Chinese restaurant that was super packed. Like it was like a nice Chinese restaurant, you know, not like the crappy buffet, but he was like, I'm going to buy you dinner. Come on, I'm buying you all dinner. Come on. And it was wild. Like I said, like I think when you had me on, it was like the first time I'd hosted, last time I was on, it was the first few times I'd hosted the Fourth Hour. And I met him originally that first time I hosted that, like one evening we met in Georgia and he was eating pizza. I don't eat pizza, but we could say I had dinner with him, but I wasn't eating. But he was over there. He kept trying to get Jamie to eat pizza. Eat some pizza, eat some pizza. And he was drinking wine and eating pizza, which is just an odd combo. But he was like, you want some wine or some pizza? I was like, no, thanks. That's diarrhea recipe right there. But anyway, so yeah, I mean, like I said, he's the same person in person as he is on air. He's exactly the same. I always wonder like how he doesn't tip over and just pass out, like the energy level, like how do you sustain that much energy all the time?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, he was really cool in person. He was really nice, really laid back. You know, he wasn't a dick or rude or, I mean, just super cool, bought us dinner and hung out. And then, you know, we had a really good interview that day. I think we did I did the whole week hosting all his shows, being on those shows, with Harrison Owen and all that stuff. And then did the long interview with him. And then he took us to dinner. So, yeah, I don't really have any criticisms. I don't technically work for Alex Jones. I just kind of host the Fourth Hour, and this is, you know, going on, I guess, 2.5 years now. So
has it been that long?
Yeah.
Oh wow, man.
Yeah. So I don't really have any criticisms. Or pretty much just every Friday I hop on there and get to speak to a giant audience. So I'm really thankful that Alex has, you know, let me do that, and you know, it's helped me in a lot of ways. Opened a lot of doors. I don't think Timcast would have happened, you know, if I hadn't done that. I don't think that the Tucker thing probably wouldn't have happened because, you know, Alex and Tucker are good buddies. So
yeah. Wow, that's cool, man. All right. Then another item that we haven't talked since I've had you on last, the philosophy angle. Did you write a book about philosophy since I had you on?
Yeah. So basically I took all my best essays, like 15 essays, and I put them into I thought I had a copy of it, but I don't have it. But yeah, here it is. It's meta narratives, right? So it's just like the 15 best essays that I did in one book, and
yeah, that's it.
It's pretty cool. I mean, I talk about it like it's an introduction to philosophy. So if people are interested in it, that's kind of what it is. But it's an educated person's introduction to philosophy, basically. So
cool.
So yeah, that was right. I'm working on a Sarah Collywood 3 too, by the way.
Oh, you are? Okay.
Yeah.
Any main topics on Esoteric Hollywood 3, you know, for sure that are going to make
well, it yeah. So like we're talking David Lynch and whatnot. I never put I did Mulholland Drive in the first book, but I didn't put the whole, what I call the Hollywood trilogy out yet. So I'm going to put that in the new one. So that'll be, Lost Highway, Mulholland Drive and Inland Empire. So Inland Empire is pretty wild. I don't know if you've gotten into that yet, but
I got the Blu-ray sitting here. I just got to find time to watch it. Cause you know, some of these movies you can't find anywhere. It's like a real pain in the butt.
It took me a while to find Inland Empire, but yeah, be prepared. It's disturbing.
Is it? Okay. Yeah, Lynch.
It's hard to watch.
Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, Lynch is. He's interesting. I have a hard time with some of his stuff. Sometimes it's. We'll talk about Twin Peaks. We'll get into
it. Right. Have you watched Lost Highway?
I have. You know, what's funny is I watched Lost Highway when it came out in the 90s. I was a teenager. And
me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I think I got into it because of I think I had the soundtrack first.
Yeah, I did too. Yeah.
Okay. And
that had Rammstein and it had David Bowie and
Nine Snails and stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then I watched the movie and I just remember being weird and there was a car that went really fast. And,
right.
So I got to watch it again because I haven't seen it. I actually never really got into Lynch much. I like his like aesthetic, but the movies to me are always like the scenes are so long and it's like, I feel like I'm suffering when I'm watching these movies half the time. And, but then Twin Peaks sort of changed my mind on all of it. And we'll talk about that, of course. But yeah. Okay, cool. And then, One other thing, because I do follow you, of course. You got a course on philosophy, is that right?
Yeah. So Richard Grove, who does a lot of kind of online education stuff, he also has a podcast that probably a lot of people are familiar with. I mean, he's had Whitney Webb and everybody on many, many, many times. The Grand Theft World, pretty well known geopolitics conspiracy podcast, kind of a libertarian oriented podcast. He said, "Hey, do you want to teach a course?" And I was like, "Yeah, sure, why not." It was a lot of work. I mean, I signed up for it knowing it was work, but it was actually quite a bit of work, more than I thought. So I put a lot of time and effort into, full on 12 course, about 30 hours, I guess, total lecture Q&A on, history of Western philosophy. So we go from the pre-Socratics all the way up to, Nietzsche, and postmodernism. So yeah, we did that a couple months ago and, I'm going to be doing some other courses too. So I'm going to do like a course on geopolitics, maybe a course on tragedy and hope, a course on espionage. I don't know.
Oh, that'd be cool.
Those are the ideas that I have to do. He was like, "Why don't you do a film symbolism course?" And I was like, "Maybe." I think more people, I don't know how many people would pay for that because they're full on like, you know, I mean, it's cheaper than a college class, but you know, I put like 70 hours into it. So it's
right.
You know, it's not $4.95 a month. You know, it's like, you know,
yeah.
I think he charges $900 for the full course, but.
Right. And I was actually working on a course. This year was the year I took it serious. Last year I started like sort of plotting it out and it was going to be the sort of the history of the occult, symbolism, where symbolism manifests in entertainment. And I was going to sort of deep dive into every topic that's related to that. But then, you know, charting it out, because I was trying to sort of methodically approach it, I was like, this is going to take forever. And I was like, well, I'm just going to get started, I guess. And I was constantly spinning my wheels of how do I make this work? Because it's just so much like to do a proper deep dive course thing. And I thought, this is going to take me forever. Like I'd have to quit doing the podcast, quit my day job, just build this course for like 6 months at least. And even then I don't know if I'd get it done. And then I started watching Twin Peaks and then it was forget it. Then I was like, nope, you know, what do you call it? Like a dog with a bone. I was like, nope, Twin Peaks is my thing now. So,
well, if you do want to, I could talk to Richard, see if you guys want to link up and I mean, you might want to do it on your own. I don't know, but he the good thing about his setup is like, he's already got it kind of set up to where the infrastructure is there for the course. And so all you do is like do the slides and stuff. And then he and his team kind of put it out, but, you know, if you want, I could mention that to him. I don't know.
Okay. We can talk. We can talk offline. It'd probably be like a 2024 thing, but yeah, I'm interested for sure. Okay. Now I'm trying to keep it moving here. Let's take 5-10 minutes. I'd like to know, or I'd like you to share who you are as far as, you know, because my exposure to you is that back, I started blogging in 2011, and at the time I was sort of and there was a different world back then for the internet. Back then you used to actually visit websites every day. More so than today, I should say. But back then, somehow we crossed paths. You had already been blogging for a period of time before me. And I just thought, oh, here's another guy who's kind of hitting on similar territories of, you know, symbolism and entertainment. That's kind of where our overlap was. And you go into sort of like heady stuff on geopolitics and philosophy that half the time it's like too far over my dumb head. And I'm like, I don't know, man. And that's one of the reasons I asked about the philosophy thing, because I took one course on philosophy in college and I loved it, but I needed the professor to explain the stuff. We would read it and I was like, dude, I don't know what I'm reading. And then the professor would sort of explain the stuff. So anyways, I do know that you were blogging for a period before me and somehow we crossed paths, but I don't really know your journey of sort of childhood to adolescence to, did you get a red pill moment at some point in your life? Like what put you on this path of, and where are you at today with your sort of beliefs in spirituality and things like that?
So I grew up in a military family. My dad was in the Navy. My mom was an editor and a librarian. So there was always books around, and my dad was a very kind of, order, you know, military engineering minded kind of guy. So he was very much into building things. So I guess I got kind of, you know, elements of both my mom and my dad in regard to interest, because I like to study systems and structures, and I look at ideas as kind of an engineering of ideas, I guess is kind of what I do. And then my mom had all that literary influence. So when I was in high school, I was like the kind of party wild comedy guy. I was like I was the class clown my senior year. I had a whole stand-up routine that I had written, and I was doing stand-up and amateur nights and whatnot. So I just wanted I was really into theater, acting, heterosexual, by the way, really into theater and acting, because every time somebody says, oh, you're into theater. Oh, okay. I was always chasing girls, so no dudes involved, but I'm just saying that was my experience in high school. I was just wild party guy who was in the theater and stand up and all that. I did stand up like my senior year for the school. I did stand up. So,
well, you know who gets all the chicks is drama guys and cheerleaders, male cheerleaders, man. So like those are the places to go. Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
Yeah, like in high school, if you're like a funny dude or a, like you said, like male cheerleader or like, you know, basically, or the quarterback, like those three people, like they get their choice of the girls in high school. Right.
right.
So, but then, you know, like my senior year, I was trying to figure out what I wanted to do. And I had like headshots and everything. And I wanted to move to New York and either do theater or go to LA and try to be an actor. But I really liked comedy too, and just film as an art form. So I was trying to figure out if I want to study art or whatever, film. And then I had a conversion experience where I was sort of reading the Bible a lot when I was 18 and got into Bible college. And I didn't really like that. I felt like the evangelical Bible world was just not, something was off. So I decided I would step away from religious studies, and I got a degree in philosophy. So I went to the university and just studied straight up philosophy and comparative religion. And that was fascinating. I was really into it, but I still had a love for film. So I started taking a lot of film classes too. And then I did grad school, and I was like, I started getting into, like you said, red pill stuff. Cause this was about 2003. The first thing I saw, I'd read one book on the UN as a conspiracy when I was 18 or 19. So I kind of had a loose idea of conspiracy stuff. And I'd heard some like John Birch level stuff about the New World Order and all this, but I didn't really put a whole lot of thought into it. And then I remember I came across a website. It was a traditional Catholic website back in 2002 or three. And they had a clip of a local TV access discussion that Alex Jones was doing about of Skull and Bones. And I was like, Skull and Bones, what is this? Funny. So I started looking at the Skull and Bones. Oh, this is Yale University. This is where the CIA recruits from. OSS and CIA come out of this. And it's like, hey, why is the intelligence networks coming out of a secret society? That's weird. So that kind of, you know, got me into watching Jones's stuff. And then I watched Loose Change, because that was right around that time is when Burma's put out Loose Change. So I watched that, and that got me questioning, hey, maybe some of these big, you know, events are not what we're told. And prior to that, like, I just had kind of like a normie GOP worldview where I was like, oh yeah, you know, Bush is a good guy. He's a Christian, and he's going to, you know, save us against the Muslims and all this stuff. And then it's like, wait a minute, that's not true. George Bush comes out of Skull and Bones. Like, this is, he's not a Christian. This is ridiculous. Right.
I got my, hey, you know, what's funny is I got my George Bush,
you got a skull
shirt on.
I didn't even see what that was. Yeah, that's exactly. So you, like, you know, like, how did you know? Are you like, you knew where I come from,
like, my roots, right? You know, it's my dad was also in the Navy, and I grew up in a house full of law and order type things, and my dad also wanted me to go in the military, and I fought it. I was like, no, F you, I'm not doing it. And I moved out when I was 18, and then I'm running out of money, and there was the military. I said, okay, well, I guess I'm gonna do it. So you
ended up doing it for, like, practical reasons?
Yeah, I actually was I lived in an apartment, and I made it about 6 months, but then I had a Honda CRX, and a girl sliced my tires, and I put two dummy wheels on, because it was both on the one side, and me and my buddy took a turn too fast in it because I was an idiot, and rammed into a car field, and I totaled it. Oh, and that was it for me. I had no money to buy another car, and I thought, well, I guess I got to figure out a way to get to college, and the military was there. So,
and you did, what was it, Air Force for?
Yeah, I was in the Air Force for 4 years.
Okay.
And that was enough to, because for me, I grew up in a lot of like an authoritarian household. I mean, I'm making my dad sound worse than he was, but it was very strict. I had a
similar dad.
Yeah, way more strict than anyone I've ever met. And then, you know, 4 more years of that, I was like, I don't need this. Like, I need my freedom. I'm out of here. And I got out. And I actually share the same view, where I think I'm very patriotic in the sense that I'm a America first kind of guy. I also, of course, you know, of course I got to support the troops. Of course I do. But I also, I take that to the next level of, okay, how do you support the troops? You question the motives for some of these things that we get involved in. And when you dig into it, you find out, oh, maybe this isn't for what they're advertising. You know?
Exactly.
Anyway, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I totally agree. So I remember, about 2003 was when was my first kind of big red pill phase, where I really got into conspiracy stuff. I was reading a bunch of books on the Masons. I started reading about the Templars. I remember buying a bunch of Templar books. And I think everybody kind of goes through, as you know, like we all kind of go through certain phases when we get red pilled, or we go down the rabbit hole of, like, oh, I'm going to read about UFOs now, right? I remember reading a bunch of stuff on UFOs in like 2005 or 6, and then you kind of just go through topics. And like you said, it was very different back then, like, because it was a lot more oriented towards websites rather than video, you know, big tech platforms like Facebook. It was all like, you're going to this person's website, you're going to this person's website, you're going to this news site, this news hub. Google Video was just coming out. And then I remember downloading every conspiracy video I could find on Google Video, like everything, all of Rich Springmeier's stuff. Right. And I remember I read Fritz's stuff in about 2004 or five, all the ones I could find. I remember getting a bunch of PDFs and like taking them and getting them printed out, because I hate reading on screen. So I would get like the physical copies of, like, you know, him and Cisco Wheeler and the mind control stuff. And
I did the same thing, but I would print them out so that during meetings that I didn't want to pay attention, I would put the print in my thing and I'd be reading, taking notes and stuff.
And then that was just kind of, but at the same time, I was still doing college. So I was studying conspiracy stuff, reading all that, watching all that as I was doing my undergrad and taking film classes and all this stuff. And I remember one of the film classes I had that was really formative was Oliver Stone class, right? So we were looking at Oliver Stone's approach to history in one of these film classes. And that ended up being really influential, because I read a bunch on him and I was like, hey, here's a Hollywood dude that's, you know, been putting conspiracy stuff out. You know, I never realized this when I was watching his movies in high school. This is, you know, conspiracy stuff. So that led to blogging. I was like, why don't I just start blogging on movies and Hollywood and symbolism? And I, like you said, yeah, I had an older blog where I was kind of throwing out random stuff and it didn't really make much sense in like 2007, 8, 9.
Wow.
Then I started all over in 2011, around the time that you were talking about Illuminati Watcher starting, where I was just going to blog on philosophy and movies. And that was it. So that kind of snowballed into, you know, doing the book eventually. I did a new website and then a new book in 2016. And yeah, that kind of just everything snowballed from there. And then it was like Jay Wiedner reached out, hey, do you want to do a TV show? I liked your book. And then it was, you know, just kind of step from there to new things, new doors opened up. But
how do you pronounce his last name?
Wiedner.
Is that how you pronounce it? Wiedner? I've always called it Jay Wiedner. I guess I'm wrong. You would know more than I would.
Honestly, it's been so long since we...
okay.
I don't remember. So okay. I'm not trying to be a douchebag. It's like... come up when we were doing... You know, I don't remember, honestly.
Okay. Yeah, no worries. You know what's really cool is that I had a subscription to Gaia, and I caught a few of the episodes. This is a few years back. And... when I started doing this Twin Peaks stuff, someone messaged me and they said, you got to check out this guy, Jay Dyer. He did an episode on Hollywood Decoded about Twin Peaks. I was like, oh, okay. So I got to check that out. I haven't seen that one because it didn't interest me until 6 months ago because I've been, pretty much unplugged from the Twin Peaks thing for my whole life. So,
well, I'm like you, like when it came out, my buddies, my kind of artsy buddies from high school, like they were really into it. And I liked David Lynch in certain respects in high school because we were a bunch of film nerds, but I didn't really get a lot of his movies. Like I went to see Lost Highway when it came out in the theater and I didn't get it. I liked the soundtrack, like we were talking about, because it had Nine Inch Nails on it. And I thought that was cool, but I just, the movie didn't make sense to me. I didn't really get Mulholland Drive at the time. I liked a few other things from him, but I just didn't get what was going on in Twin Peaks and why people liked it. And it wasn't until 2007 that I went back and revisited the whole thing. And then I figured out, oh, actually I kind of get it now. Like there's a lot of esoteric kind of occultic stuff going on. You know, Twin Peaks is a satire of America. It's a satire of soap operas. I mean, it's a lot of different things, comedy, dark comedy. And then that gave me a new kind of eyes to go back and reappreciate a lot of David Lynch's stuff. And I got really deep into it back in about 2008, 9, 10, such that, you know, I put him basically in both of the books. I thought he was really, really good. And then I had my own theories about what it was about. And then, when the new season came out, Mark Frost put out this book, Twin Peaks, The Secret History, which kind of surprised me because as I was reading through this book, there's actually references to the Crowley stuff, to the OTO, all the stuff that I kind of thought it was about. Mark Frost kind of vindicates that by saying, yeah, that's what it's about. Yeah.
How funny. I took the same journey, man. Cause as people already know, and I guess now's a good time as any, let's talk Twin Peaks. And I want to sort of give a spoiler warning because it's really difficult to talk about Twin Peaks and unpacking the occult symbolism without spoiling at least some bit of the storyline. So I started doing Twin Peaks episodes on my bonus feed. So some people are only now starting, like they're starting with episode one. They're on the pilot right now. So what I'd like to do is have you tell them, because some people aren't going to want to hear the spoilers and they're going to drop off of this show right now. So what I'd like to do is, could I have you tell everyone who is going to drop off where they can find you and where they can get tickets for the show in LA real quick?
Yeah, you can find me over at jaysanalysis.com. You can find me on my YouTube channel at Jay Dyer. You can find me on my Rockfin, Jay Dyer as well. and then the event will be July 6th in Hollywood at the Valley Relics Museum, which is at the Van Nuys Airport. It's an event venue and it'll be 2 to 7 PM. It's going to be a lot of fun. Our events are a lot like parties, as people say. So it's not like a boring conference. It's much more like a party. So there's a lot of music, a lot of fun, a lot of comedy, but there's also some serious stuff too. I'm going to be doing impressions. Jamie will be doing a lecture on Hollywood I'll be doing a lecture on the meta-narratives philosophy book, symbolism, the philosophy of symbolism, and then Jamie Kennedy will be doing a step at the end of the night. You can get those tickets at my Eventbrite under my name, or you can go to my Twitter. It's up at the top of my Twitter, or it's at my website. Every post has a link to the live event. So yeah, and then I'll be putting up some stuff today about last minute tickets on all the social media. So anybody follows me on social media, you'll see that today. Well, you'll be putting this up later, but so yeah, it'll be all over my social media by the time you see this. So
okay, cool. All right, man, awesome. Now let's talk Twin Peaks here, because this is the thing, and I'm looking at the time. We got maybe, let's go 10-15 minutes on Twin Peaks. You know, and 6 months ago, I finally sat down and said, I'm going to watch this show. I've been trying to watch it for years. I'd never get into it because it just feels like silly soap opera stuff. And sometimes David Lynch's pacing sucks. And I finally made it through. And I thought, man, there's a lot of, and that's why I switched gears from doing a course to saying, you know what, we're going to do a Twin Peaks super deep dive, because this is the masterclass. This is the course on occult symbolism in entertainment. And I watched the first two seasons, then I watched Fire Walk With Me, which blew my mind. And then I watched season three and I said, oh my gosh, there's all these things that we've talked about over the years. All of it's here, but it's really subtle. It's really underlying. Then I read the book, the Mark Frost book, and I said, holy crap. Right. Just like you did. I said, it's really what they're doing. So tell us, and you could take this conversation anywhere you want with Twin Peaks. You could even, you know, tell us big picture what you think it's about, or pick out a couple small chunks that you find interesting. What's your take on the Twin Peaks?
Yeah, I think it's a multi-layered, as we said, one of the things that's great about David Lynch is that when I go back and watch old stuff, like say Wild at Heart is on the one hand, it's a satire of America. It's also comedy, and it's The Wizard of Oz, right? So he likes to kind of merge a lot of different things. There's some weird esoteric stuff going on with his view of transcendental meditation and how the subconscious kind of gives us this inspiration. He has a quote where he says that beneath the surface of the waking consciousness, there's another world, right? And when we go into that, he says you can dig into other worlds yet deeper. So old interviews, he talks a lot about surrealism. And the thing that the surrealists thought was that there's not really a difference between the waking state and the dream state. And if you could live as if there's no difference between the waking state and the dream state, they thought, I think that would influence and help their artwork a lot. And I do like a lot of surrealist art. So, you know, everybody, we think of Dali, right? Salvador Dali is kind of classic surrealist art. And Lynch talks about a lot of his influences being like a lot of these weird fringe surrealist people. And again, that's telling us, the reason that's relevant is telling us about tapping into the dream state. And the dream state is kind of the manifestation of our subconscious. So there's perhaps some Jungian elements here. There's some Gnostic elements here. But, you know, Lynch clearly has this kind of loose influence and affiliation with Eastern philosophy and thought through the transcendental meditation stuff and the Lynch Foundation. So we know that's kind of where he's pulling from. But there are also, as you noted, these clearly esoteric and even ritual magic components that pop up at times when we consider that the real story of Twin Peaks is not just a corrupt, you know, wealthy establishment, you know, Ben Horn trying to control the city or whatever and own it, and the you know, Catherine and her scams and trying to, that's one layer of what's going on, because there's a deeper undercurrent of this kind of ritual magic that's been going on, that's kind of tapping into the spiritual realm, that I think ends up being like the demonic, or it ends up being these entities or these sort of aliens, which are really the same thing as kind of the demons or the demonic. So Lynch is basically, even though he's not Christian or doesn't have a biblical worldview, is kind of tapping into that. And we do find these kind of references to the Whore of Babylon and the portal being opened, and the, you know, the gates of the apocalypse kind of being opened with the Trinity site in New Mexico. And a lot of that taps into the Jack Parsons Hubbard mythology, right? So that's, I think, the subcurrent spiritually speaking, with what the portal is and what's going on out in the woods with this ritual magic and tapping into these hidden dimensions, these hidden worlds. And that's, I think, what leads to eventually the possession, right? Since we're in the members section, we can talk about the fact that there's outright demonic possession that goes on, right? I mean, like Bob, the serial killers are they eventually possess people. That leads to the murders. Cooper ends up possessed as well at the end of season two, and his actual persona is like banished into this, you know, in between world, right? The dark room, or the
Black Lodge,
the room everybody thinks of, right?
Or the waiting room. Is it
the waiting room?
That's where I'm still trying to iron out details of the story, because there's so much to know. You've got the red room, which some people call the waiting room, but I've seen some people say that's the Black Lodge. I don't know.
I think technically it's not technically the Black Lodge. Technically the Black Lodge is like the, you know how like the room turns into like, really, it can get really demonic. Like when Laura's like the demonic version of Laura.
Yes. Yes.
Or like in season three, when that, the arm turns into this weird kind of demon tree. Like, so there's like another layer to the waiting room. That's okay. Technically the Black Lodge, which is basically hell. Yeah. Like in season three, when that entity appears at the very beginning, that's coming out of the Black Lodge, I think.
The one that birthed Judy or whatever. Yeah. Okay. Okay.
And that's supposed to be, so this gets really crazy, but I think what's happening is that in season three, Jude, I think it's a Gnostic presentation of the Christian God or the biblical God, right? That's the imprisoning God that's, I'm trying to remember. Is it Laura's like locked in a hidden dimension away from Jaude? Isn't that what it is?
Man, I get so confused watching this show.
It's something like that.
Season three. I'm watching season three for the second time now.
Okay, yeah.
I'm on episode 16, and this is where things start getting sort of more into that element of the story. So I don't recall, because they haven't reintroduced Laura's character yet. So I don't. Well,
there's going to be. It specifically is supposed to be the birth of Antichrist, or the mother of Antichrist, something like that, because Laura's mom has a specific reference to the Trinity site and the little, is it a frog demon that crawls in her mouth?
I think it's like a frog with wings or something.
The story is that Laura is hidden from this demon because she's supposed to be some sort of apocalypse symbol or figure.
Oh, wow. So
she's hidden in a dimension at that place where she's working in a diner, you know, in like New Mexico.
She's
supposed to be hidden from Jaude.
Is Sarah Palmer, that's Laura, you know, Laura's mother.
Right.
So in episode 8 of season 3, they have that giant atomic bomb detonation, right?
Right.
Which opens the portals.
Correct.
And that's when Judy or Jaude, this sort of insect frog looking thing with wings, crawls into the mouth of a young girl. Is that right? Sarah Palmer?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh,
if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That would make sense, because I just finished this episode in season three, episode, I think 15, Sarah Palmer goes to the bar and she takes her face off.
Yes.
And like, she's clearly some kind of, I don't know, demonically inspired.
She's possessed. And because the idea is that Laura was going to be, in like the Crowleyan sense, the Whore of Babylon, she would bring about the end.
Yeah, because you keep hearing throughout the show, in season 1 and 2, Cooper refers to Laura as being full of mysteries.
Yes.
So, okay.
She's the woman of mysteries. Okay. And I think, if I remember, Cooper was trying to say, I think he had a role in maybe hiding her in this dimension from Jaude. And that's why, part of the reason why Cooper's in this other realm, because so he went to this other realm to save Laura, but that resulted in his body being possessed by Bob, basically.
Okay.
I think that's right.
Okay.
It's been a while since I watched season 3 though, but I think that's right.
Yeah. It's an intense amount of research that it takes to get into the show.
Does. It's crazy. It's like its own, it's like a whole role-playing game of like it's like learning Dungeons and Dragons, but it's like Twin Peaks world or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And it makes me hesitate to go into this, because what I want to do is go through every episode, and it's going to take forever. And then I'm going to go through the books, because I've read the books, all, you know, four of the books, and then I want to write my own book about it, but I'm intimidated because there's so many people that, just like you said, it's like a role-playing thing, and they know all the ins and outs, and I'm just learning it because I'm only on my second run through. And so real quick question I have for you about it. Do you think it's possible? Because like I watch this stuff, and you know me, man, I'm fickle, right? I do believe that some of this occult stuff probably works. So when you watch this stuff, like for instance, the idea of an atomic bomb, the first atomic bomb detonation at the Trinity site in 1945, do you think it's possible that could have opened up some kind of gateways and entities can come through? Or do you think all these people that are into this stuff are just nuts and they're just, you know, over embellishing and they believe lies? Because like my wife talked to me about Aleister Crowley. You know, my wife, she's the normie, right? We do a podcast together, and she hits me with normie questions, and she has good ones. Like, for instance, we talked about Crowley, and she said, why does everyone admire this Crowley guy so much? And I said, well, you know, he synthesized a lot of beliefs, and he apparently knew what he was doing, and he was able to sort of contact these entities because he was so good at what he did or whatever. And she said, well, how do people know he wasn't making this up? And I was like, you know, that's a good point. Maybe he was buffaloing everybody. So what's your take on all this occult stuff? Do you think it's possible and it's just dangerous and maybe even demonic? Or do you think people are just making this stuff up because they're grifting for, I don't know, whatever?
Yeah, I think that those aren't mutually exclusive either. You can have real things that are also grifters, right? Like maybe Crowley was a mix of both. Like maybe he was involved in stuff that really did kind of tap into the spiritual realm, but also he was this con man and a grifter, right? I mean, I know that when I had really intense LSD experiences when I was 17, like I know that, I mean, I was contacting some kind of entity. I mean, I've had that experience, and I don't think that it was only my mind that was projecting that. I think there really is something. But when it comes to more speculative stuff about like the theories of the Trinity site, do I know for sure that that was a magic ritual? I don't know for sure. It could have been something that altered, you know, metaphysics and opened a portal to the demonic or something like that. But I just don't know. But I do know that some of the people like Parsons and those figures who did this kind of stuff and were involved in that, like they viewed it that way. Whether or not that makes it so, I don't know. I mean, I know it doesn't make it so because they viewed it that way, but I'm saying a lot of people view it this way. So there is some connection between our psyche and the external world and like how we see and interpret the world and how it's manifested. Right. Trying to go into full quantum stuff because I think a lot of that's bullshit, but but I mean, I do think there is a reality to ritual. There's a reality to rituals affecting us on a unconscious psychological way. I think like in the liturgy, there's a ritual that's going on that's affecting us in that way. So seems plausible to me that there would be like a demonic version of like the liturgy and the ritual, right? Which if the holy thing does its thing spiritually, then seems like there would be the unholy thing doing its thing as well in a spiritual way. So it seems plausible. And that's definitely, I think, what Lynch is going for when you see the Trinity bomb going off and then you see that sort of demon sort of entity come out of the ectoplasm, right? Like that's I think what he's going for. Whether or not the people at Trinity site saw it as that, I don't know, but it's also possible that, you know, warfare can release maybe spiritual energy, right? I mean, atomic bombs or bombs going off and warfare, mass death in warfare might release kind of, you know, these spiritual energies.
Yeah, wow. Yeah, crazy stuff. Last Twin Peaks question. You had in Esoteric Hollywood 1, you talked about the ring. You had an interesting take on it. Do you remember what you were saying about that? You were saying something about how the ring is, I want to say you called it a talisman or something to that effect.
Oh, yeah, so I was looking back here. I called it a magical ring. I said the Black Lodge is mentioned in Crowley's novel Moonchild as members of the Golden Dawn, and the reports of Lynch asking his actors to speak and walk in reverse for the filming of the astral scenes in the lodge may have a Crowleyan undertone. All of this was told in striking detail in Twin Peaks, as Cooper's visions demonstrate a human sacrificial component. In other words, Bob is a demonic force subservient to the man from another place whose lust for fun involves rape, pedo stuff, and more. And then we notice at one point the one arm man Gerard Mike, he like shows that ring like, hey, I've got this inner, I'm part of this group, right? You don't want to mess with me. So, you know, people think that it's Ben Horn that's really calling the shots, but like, no, it's like actually there's an a cult that's really calling the shot in Twin Peaks. That's my take on it, right?
Okay. That symbol on it is also, I mean, you could talk theories on even just the symbol.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of a goat head. It's kind of a dog's head. It's kind of like, you know, I mean, it might be referencing things like Son of Sam. In season 3, it comes up with the playing card, I think. Evil Coop has like a playing card with the dog head on it, which is the same symbol, but it's also a symbol of two mountains with a portal. So it's a portal between the two mountaintops. So it's a symbol, I think, that functions in a lot of different ways. Yeah, yeah. But there's one point when it's shown where Cooper's looking through the window. He's just pondering as he looks outside the window of the police station, and you can see behind him, I think it's the sigil to Asmodeus. I don't know if you can see it there, but you'll notice that there's Cooper looking out the window.
Season 2.
And there's like a sigil, and that's relevant because that's, I think, telling us that, no, this is actually about like a ritual magic cult, right?
Oh, wow.
Now, I put that in the book before Mark Frost thing came out, and that's why I think I ended up vindicated because, you know, those are all symbols from the Goetia. And in that scene where they're... Cooper and Andy are looking at the drawing on the chalkboard, there's like ritual magic stuff like hanging everywhere as part of the research. Right. So to me, I think that the ring is supposed to signify, you know, some kind of inner magic cult that's really kind of calling the shots in Twin Peaks. Right. Because they're in touch with the higher powers. And then I'm blanking on, but who's the evil FBI guy in season 2? Wyndham Earle.
Oh, right. Yes.
So when Wyndham Earle shows up, you notice like he's the evil FBI guy who's been studying the dark occult stuff. And then when he gets to Twin Peaks, he's like, I'm here because like I'm actually interested in the real power. And he wants to tap into the Black Lodge, right?
Yeah, he does a pretty good dialogue about
the
reason he's there. And yeah, he kind of drops a lot of huge statements.
So but he's there because he's like, I know what's really going on in Twin Peaks, and it's surrounding the Black Lodge and the cult and the portal and like tapping into those powers. He's like, that's why I'm here. I want that. I don't care about, you know, the murders of some chick. Right. But it is, I think, ritual murder that is tied to the portal to the Black Lodge. So in other words, you have to do the ritual murder that opens the doorway. Right. And that's kind of what we originally think is going on with Laura and all that in season 1 and 2. And Laura's dad obviously is involved in the cult. He's part of this sex ring. He's been molesting Laura, right? That's part of the storyline. So it's a incest PEDO cult that's tied to trying to opening this portal.
Wow. And then the ring, they refer to it in the Mark Frost book as the Jade Ring.
Yes.
And that's the reference that in the Peter Levine and Tom DeLonge, the first Alien book, they go through. It's funny because that book talks a lot about Gnosticism for no apparent reason. I think it's, you know, we both think there's a reason for that, but they make note to talk about the Aztecs using jade in human sacrifices, especially of younger, more pure souls. So I think it's curious that in fact was in the Twin Peaks storyline, and Peter LaVenda, you know, I don't know his personal stances, but he knows a lot about the occult. Some people claim that he's an actual practitioner. I don't know where that goes, but I tried to get him on my show a million times. He too busy for me. But that jade thing ties into that idea of sacrifice, particularly of you know, young people. So,
well, the ring comes up interestingly in the Mark Frost book, and it's in the section on the ring. It's tied directly to Crowley.
Oh, so interesting.
The very page where the ring is discussed is the page where they're talking about Crowley. And I'm trying to remember what he says the ring is. It's something to do with, like, it was found somewhere going back to like the 1800s. Like somebody found it in the 1800s and it was passed down. Do you remember this?
Yeah, part? Lewis and Clark, I think, is
that's they, it. They exactly. Say they found yeah. It. Yeah. So he tied the. By the way, they were Masons, which is interesting, right? So there is this Masonic tie. And he mentions Frost mentions Freemasonry in that section too.
I think he mentions the Illuminati also. Yeah. Anyway, yeah. Okay. Well, I know you got to go, so let me wrap this up.
But by the way, I just wanted to say so. And I know you know this, but for those in the audience, like, so the symbol you can see, like, ties into this diagram. You can see the two mountains and then the diamond in the middle. That's the basic symbol there. Mm-hmm. But the show describes it as the White Lodge is like the heaven area because Major Briggs goes to the White Lodge. The Black Lodge is down there at the bottom, which is basically hell. And then the waiting room is that where you first go when you step through the portal in the middle there. Does that make sense?
Yep. Yeah. Fascinating. Yeah. Interesting stuff, man. I mean, we could talk about this. I'll probably have you back on. We can just talk Twin Peaks for a solid hour.
Do a deep dive on that.
Before we wrap up, I've got my five rapid fire questions. This is a newer thing I do with guests, and it's simply yes or no answers. No need to justify anything, just a vibe check. Okay. they're not yes or no answers, but some of them are, but okay. You don't need to, you know, defend any of this, or it's meant to be a quick part. So let's go with number one. Do you like Tom Hanks?
No.
What was your red pill moment?
Yes.
What's one conspiracy you 100% believe in?
There's a bunch. I mean, the Illuminati was a proto-communist. Everything is equal, and we'll use the Freemasonic Lodge to bring about world communism. I believe that one.
What about a conspiracy that you actually do not believe in at all?
There's a lot of those too. Mandela effect.
Oh, interesting. Okay. How do you unplug? How do you keep yourself from going black pill and just, you know, going negative? How do you keep yourself from going to the Black Lodge here?
I guess staying in consistent with attending the liturgy and going to confession, I guess.
All right. Sounds good, man. And then last, let's plug where people can find your work. And let's talk about the Jamie Kennedy LA show that you got going on one more time for people that are interested.
Yeah, all my stuff's at jaysanalysis.com is my website, archive and member section there as well. And then Rockfin, you can find my stuff there. And then you can find me on, you know, YouTube and Twitter and all the other places under my name. The Jamie Kennedy event is going to be a lot of fun. July 6th in L.A. It's a Valley Relics Museum, which is located at the Van Nuys Airport event venue there. And it's going to be a five-hour event of comedy, philosophy, movie dissection, book signing, all the above. So, you know, how would you not want to come meet Jamie Kennedy from Scream, from Malibu's Most Wanted, Jamie Kennedy Experiment, right? A really funny dude. I think Jamie Kennedy Experiment is one of the funniest shows out there. And if you remember Punk'd, actually Punk'd comes after Jamie Kennedy Experiment. And it's kind of like a ripoff. Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. I remember.
You remember, Jamie Kennedy would always say, "You've been X'd." And then when Ashton Kutcher did his, it's like, "You've been Punk'd," right? So it's like literally like a copy paste. But
how funny.
If you go back and watch, Jamie and I've been watching the DVDs of Jamie Kennedy Experience. I mean, it's still funny. Dude. It's a hilarious show. Anyway, so it's going to be a lot of fun, and come get autographs with Jamie, and you can get your book signed and all that. So July 6th, get the tickets my Twitter, my YouTube, my website. It's all there.
Cool, man. All right. Thanks again, Jay. Appreciate
Thank you so much, Isaac.
There you go. The links are in the show notes. Follow Jay Dyer on all the platforms. His Twitter's always popping. Get on his YouTube. He's got a massive YouTube. We didn't even talk about his huge YouTube channel. And he's on Rockfin. But jaysanalysis.com is where it all jumps off. And then he hosts Alex Jones InfoWars all the time, which is like insane, right? And more importantly, get the dang tickets. Go to the Eventbrite page. I'll link it in the show notes. You can also retrieve it on Jay Dyer's Twitter. July 6th, it goes down. Him, you know, Jamie's going to be there. Jamie Kennedy's going to be there. They're going to knock you out for 5 hours with a party time, right? I think it's worth it. He said he's got 30 to 40 impressions he does. I want to hear 30 or 40 impressions. I think that'd be worth it right there. It makes me want to hop on the plane and leave my family here and be like, you know what? I'm out of here. I'm going to go check out this show. So, yeah, support your boy. Get the tickets over there. And until next time, stay woke.